doing this. They said when you got here, the whole thing started. I think you're the cause of all this. I think you're evil. Evil!
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Monsters, John. Monsters from the It.
I'll follow you through.
Swallow this.
The power of Christ compels you. The power of Christ compels you.
Have you ever heard Candyman?
You moved the cemetery, but you left the body stitched.
It rubs the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
You don't know what death is.
This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation.
Messenger of God, you do not need to stay here.
God is dead! Satan lives!
It's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
The animals are contagious! What fire! Stop! You know I did!
Whatever you do, don't fall
asleep. It's time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Secretary, the missiles are flying.
See me in hell, Mr. Thorne. There will be a shower out of sentence.
I can't lie to you about your chances, but you have my sympathies.
It's still a procedure. It's called making a head on a stick.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains.
There is no one watching out for us, Merrill. We are all on our own.
And there's no more room in hell for the dead who walk here.
The events of that day were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre crimes in the annals of American history, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Something in the middle! Shut the door, my God! You gotta tell them! Silent Green is people!
You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over!
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. For folks who are curious, we're recording this on January 2nd, 2020. So that's the recording date. Before we continue, due to the holiday schedule, we're short some guests, so we got a couple of special guests to join us as replacements. First off, in the state of Missouri.
Hi, this is Kevin.
Kevin, how are you, sir?
I'm not too bad. A little tired, but doing well.
Excellent. Some folks may know Kevin from a couple of our book episodes that we did. He also did the 2019... what we are looking forward to episode as a guest host for that. So folks will be able to go back and listen to those episodes. But also, usually, even though he couldn't make it this last year, he joins us in Mystic, Connecticut. So folks who want to join us at Mystic in 2020, they can meet not only the Dark Discussions co-host, but probably you too, Kevin, if you make it this year.
I hope so.
Very well.
I don't have any sick cats right now, so I should be okay.
Very well. And in the state of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going, sir?
It's going well.
Excellent. So all of us, it's 7:42 p.m., except for Kevin, which it's 6:42 p.m. And we are here to discuss films, but for folks who are new to the podcast, what Dark Discussions is. Dark Discussions podcast is the podcast where we discuss basically genre films, so fantasy, sci-fi, horror, thrillers, techno thrillers, mystery, grindhouse, art house, cult films, drive-in films, midnight movies, and whatnot. We basically dissect and critique as well as review and basically try to talk intelligently about a genre that has unfortunately not been talked intelligently enough until hopefully these podcasts that come out by us and a few of our friends. So where can people find us? DarkDiscussions.com. You can email us at DarkDiscussions@AOL.com. You can follow us on Facebook, where there's a lot of talk. The group is called Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. Right now, there's a lot of talk about the Witcher TV series on Netflix. The people are talking about, Ready or Not, because that just hit VOD, and so people are talking about that film a lot. So a lot of good stuff being discussed on the group, so join us there. Also, you can follow us on Twitter, Dark Discussion 1, and you can also go to Patreon, where you can support us, patreon.com/darkdiscussions, where for every $5 that you donate to the podcast per month, you get to choose an episode of the film for us to review. So, for example, if you donate $15 per month, you would have three choices. They can be three different choices or three of the same choice, and that goes into a pot where we basically randomly pick a new episode. And we're going to be doing that next week because I haven't collected all the people's requests yet, because this is the new quarter, and we usually draw a new request at the beginning of the quarter, but a couple of stragglers are sending in their films that they want us to review, and they're going to be added to the list, and we'll pick probably next week. And that's pretty much it. That's all I got. So I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So, Mike, what are we going to discuss tonight?
We are going to be discussing the independent film Bliss, which is available on a streaming service near you.
Nikki's pushing me to drop your pieces.
I'm going broke. I can't live off of nothing.
And I can't live off 10% of nothing.
I haven't finished a painting in 3 months.
Try this.
The closest thing they got to a pure, uncut mix of cocaine and DMT.
Started painting again. I don't know, something came over me and then it all just started pouring out of me. I don't even remember doing it.
Like you blacked out?
It's like I was possessed.
I mean, that's good, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Tell me, Dad, do you think it was the bliss or the blood?
Whatever you gave me, just let me know so I can kick it with something else, because I am not well. I'm dying. You're not gonna die. Trust me.
I saw your painting in there. I saw your inspiration all over the counter, too.
You know what's wrong. You don't give it up. You can't.
That's right. Bliss is a 2019 film. It's the third feature-length film by Joe Bagos. Folks who are familiar with independent horror films that may listen to this podcast may know some of his other films. His other two films are Almost Human, which had a pretty decent cult following a couple of years ago. I think it was 2013. That was his debut film. Kind of have a alien space thing. Abduction, the Thing kind of combo. It's a pretty good film. I think I put that as one of my top 10 or top 20 films of that year. Then he did another film entitled, what was it called? The Mind's Eye. The Mind's Eye. And that film actually takes place in the town of Danbury, Connecticut, where one of our co-hosts, Chrissy, lives. And that's about a psychokinetic horror type film. That was a pretty damn good film as well. Joe Bagos is out of Rhode Island, so he's originally from Rhode Island. And his latest film, VFW, is coming out in February of 2020. And that one looks pretty cool, too. Basically, a group of people stuck in a VFW Hall. So you got some black op people that are retired. So they're going to be fighting an invading force. And so it looks similar to like a green room or something. So it looks pretty good. This film here, Bliss, is his latest film before VFW. It doesn't star anyone that I really know. So if anybody else does, they can let us know when they begin to talk. And the lead, though, is Dora Madison. She has done a number of TV shows. And more than just recurring, too. But I'm not familiar with those shows, or at least I'm familiar with them, but I haven't really watched them. So I guess we can get into our opinions and how we heard about this film. So I guess we can start with you, Mike.
This is one of those films that, it's an internet film. I heard from people talking about it online just... especially in the conversation of one of their favorite films for the year. I know the director had directed Almost Human, which came out like 6 years ago, something like
2013.
That.
2013, yeah, exactly.
And I kind of enjoyed that film, so I was curious to check it out for that reason. That's how I heard about it. I got to say, I was really not thrilled with the film. A lot of it just has to do with the type of film that it is. I didn't like it. My wife hated it. And the reason for that is that most of the film is just sort of like a film we reviewed earlier this year, which was Braid, where most of the film is in this sort of attempt to be psychedelic, drug-induced, alcohol-fueled
dream type thing.
And it seems to me that if that ran for about an hour of the 90-minute runtime, and it was about 30 minutes of story, and that just tends to turn me off. You know, a few minutes of it is one thing, but just going on this for an extended period of it just feels a forced artfulness and pretentiousness and completely unnecessary. And I don't think they had enough there to really carry the story. None of the characters are especially likable. I can't exactly get on board with the lead and feel any empathy for what she's going through. And again, you're kind of stuck in this because it's done so much from the point of view of the lead character. You don't really know what the hell you're seeing any more than the character does. It goes to an interesting place, but by that point I was kind of turned off by the film. And again, it just felt like a 30-minute Twilight Zone episode or Creepshow episode or Tales from the Dark Side episode just stretched out to 90 minutes. So that was my opinion on it.
All right. Very good. I heard about it similar to you, Mike, but since Joe Bagos is one of those directors on my list of directors or screenwriters that I always look out for, his name popped up on this film. So I had kind of known about the film even prior to the buzz that it was receiving on social media. It isn't getting as much buzz on social media as some films, but that was probably because it wasn't free until January 1st. And so now it'll probably get a lot of buzz in this last month, or I should say this first month of the new decade, depending on your opinion of when the decade starts. I actually pre-ordered the Blu-ray like 2 months before it came out. So it eventually popped in and at my mailbox then it sat in a pile for about a month. And then I watched it around Thanksgiving or somewhere in December anyway. I didn't love the film at the time, because as Mike said, it is kind of drug induced and all that. And I don't mind that. I kind of like the cultish, ripoffs of, I guess, Pulp Fiction times 20. And this kind of had that feel, even though it was more psychedelic, like Mike said, Braid. But it definitely does have the grindhouse and cult film midnight movie aspects that a lot of people who would listen to this podcast would like. So violence, gore, blood, nudity, sex, drugs, all that stuff, metal music, and so on and so forth. I do agree with Mike, too, that the characters are all unlikable, or pretty close to it. But I rewatched it again a couple of days ago, and I liked it a whole lot more. It's one of those films that the second watch and you see things, and now you know where it's going, because, as Mike said, there's this strange place that it goes, or interesting place it goes near the end. Rewatching it, I really appreciate it, though I do see one other aspect that kind of is interesting, the drug-infused scenes of our lead character seemed a little over the top, how she acted, maybe overacted. But all in all, I would say this is a big thumbs up for cult fans, even more so than horror fans. And if you like grindhouse films and horror films from the 70s, drive-in films, this fits that perfectly. And I could see this possibly popping in my top 10 horror films of the year. So we'll find out when it shakes out within the next 2 weeks when I put my list together. All right, so let's go to Kevin.
Well, I heard of this because you mentioned it to me, Phil, and that's about it. You asked me to review the movie for an episode, and as I have to admit, I haven't heard of it until you asked me, and I watched it, and much like Mike, I wasn't that fond of it. My wife was in the other room, and I really didn't want her to. I mean, there are especially some scenes that I really didn't want her walking in on, thinking that I was watching some sort of XXX type movie. Much like Mike, I'm just not into the drug-induced overuse of drugs, massive use of drugs, lots of drugs. The only character I thought was somewhat likable was the gallery owner, because, I mean, at least she wanted to give the artist a chance. She didn't want to, you know, now I'm getting a spoiler, so I'll shut up about that one, but... The only character I liked was a gallery owner. I couldn't stand the main character.
All right, very well. Barrett.
So for me, I had heard about it because of you, and we had talked about reviewing it for this episode. I had not heard of it before then. I had not heard of this director either, and most of the people in it I did not recognize. I only recognized one person, the guy that played... her agent. He was in a short run show with Katherine Heigl in 2014 called State of Affairs. Chris,
you didn't
McKenna,
recognize George Wendt?
No, I missed him.
Norm, you missed Norm. You didn't recognize Norm?
No, I didn't.
Oh, wow.
Was it actually him?
Norm? My bad.
Yeah, that was Norm.
Yeah, you're right. It was him. How about that? Okay.
I didn't realize
that. I remember seeing his name in the credits. And I'm thinking to myself, really?
Yeah, that was him. He was one of the poker players. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, he was Pops.
Oh, okay. Now I gotcha. Yep. But I liked the movie. I'm not really bothered by the whole drug-induced whatever you guys are bothered by, and that doesn't really bother me.
That doesn't include me. Don't include me with those two guys.
Yeah, I kind of thought it went hand-in-hand with the and I kind of thought it was kind of
I'll bleep that out because that's a spoiler.
The problem she was having, it went hand in hand with that. So it was kind of hard for me to distinguish which was causing her issues, aside from her being a very unlikable person. And I actually, the only person I liked was her, I guess, boyfriend. He at least was looking out for her, trying to, and actually her dealer was too, but he wasn't very likable either. So yeah, there weren't a lot of people to like in this movie. But the movie is quite interesting where it goes and where it ends up. So I enjoyed it. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Cronenberg in some ways.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. All right. Sounds good.
Actually,
so
it partially reminded me. Sorry. It's just, it partially reminded me. I forgot the name of the movie. It's like about that one guy in Texas who was trying to paint a big,
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The Devil's Candy. Devil's Candy.
Yeah, that was it. It reminded me a little bit like that because he had, well, essentially had two artists painting something that, a big painting that was dark in nature. That's not spoilery.
Right, right. Okay, so that's our opinion. So it looks like it's split down the middle. Me and Barrett give it a thumbs up, and Mike and Kevin weren't as fond of it for different reasons. They weren't fond of it, but
I'd like to mention one other thing. I totally agree with you about the Grindhouse aspect of this. If you like Grindhouse, you probably like this movie.
Yeah,
it depends. No, because not every Grindhouse film is like this. I don't mind Grindhouse films. But this is kind of maybe a little bit like Mandy. It just was throwing a lot of noise and sound at the screen that never really moved the story anywhere.
Yeah, and I understand that. I'm just saying.
So I don't think it's just a matter of it being Grindhouse. Because
well, you know what it's like. It's like
do have stories.
You know what it's like. It's like Neon Demon. If you like Neon Demon, you'd like this.
No, I disagree with that, too. I think there was more to Neon Demon.
Interesting.
I mean,
you might like it. I'm just saying, if you like Grindhouse,
you might like it. You might
like
it, yeah. I mean,
just like you might not, but I think that if you're inclined towards that, you have a better chance. How's that?
Yeah, but again, it has to do with... I think if you do take those films, you know, and we mentioned, what was the one, Braid from earlier in the year... You know, where, again, most of the film is spent kind of not sure what the hell is going on, and where it's mostly symbolism over storytelling or imagery over and sound over storytelling, that's what you're looking at. And that's not – I don't consider that to be Grindhouse.
Well, I could see Braid is somewhat Grindhouse, but what I texted – I don't know if I texted it to you, Mike, but I texted it to – I think Kevin and definitely to Barrett, which is this film is Grindhouse meets Art House.
Yeah.
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 I kind of agree with that.
But yeah, I see your point, Mike. I mean, it's like, you know, some crappy slasher. If you recommend it, you can say if you like slashers from the 80s, you may like this film. You may not, but you're more apt to. I think that's what Barrett's trying to say. And I'm not saying Bliss is crappy. I'm just saying it's a film that if you
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but again, I think putting it under Grindhouse isn't necessarily an apt comparison, because it's because there's a lot more to it, or there's a lot of stylistic hallmarks that are not necessarily characteristic of Grindhouse.
Oh, European Grindhouse, like the Italian stuff.
Italian cinema, sure. Where you're going over the total cinema stuff, where it's imagery over story and narrative, I suppose.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you pretty much. I mean, the story is pretty simple. So there is a story. The question is, you just felt the breakdown of our lead character was 60 minutes of padding. Is what you're trying to say.
Most of it, yeah.
Gotcha. Before we keep on talking about it, because that's a lot of good stuff we're talking about before the spoiler alert, I have to do the wiki. So, wiki. A brilliant painter facing the worst creative block of her life turns to anything she can to complete her masterpiece, spiraling into a hallucinatory hellscape of drugs, sex, and murder in the sleazy underbelly of Los Angeles. To be
honest,
I have
a question about that.
Well... Let me say something about it. I don't know if she's turning to things to get her masterpiece done, because I think she's just this way anyway. It just happens to be when she begins going down the spiral, she's beginning to do a quote-unquote masterpiece. But I think she was like this even before. She wasn't trying to... go down the spiral to be a better painter. I think she was just that way anyway, and she went down the spiral because that's just her lifestyle. That's my opinion. You were going to say something, Barrett.
Yeah, I just find it funny they call her brilliant. I don't think anything in the movie would tell us that she's brilliant. She could be mediocre.
I,
for all we know.
I,
She did have a fan approach her at one point and said, "Oh, I saw you on the cover of this. I saw your work on the cover of this magazine. It was awesome. It was, you know, that." I mean, it's obvious that she has a history of successful artistic pieces.
She's got a gallery opening,
right?
I had a student who had a gallery opening in a small town. That's not, you know, but that's kind of a, oh, here's a local artist who, you know, this doesn't feel like that because they're in L.A., I think.
Yes.
You know, so she's got a gallery opening in L.A. She's got a music producer who's interested in signing her to a contract for her album covers. You know, she's got had a deal to sell 3 covers for the magazine. You know, so she's got at least some talent. She is not, no offense to the people who do this, she's not like one of these people that you see at conventions, you know, that's how they sell their artworks. They just go to convention. They're just their hobby, right? And they're trying to make a living doing that by making paintings of Jason Voorhees or something. You know, she's actually making a living as an artist. So whether she's brilliant or not, art eye of the beholder, but she's certainly good enough.
Right.
That she's not just, she's not a hack. She's not an unknown. She's not an amateur.
Self-published,
right?
She's kind of hitting a low point at this point.
Well, I mean, she's definitely getting a block, and she's definitely getting a block. I mean, that's kind of how this starts. Is she's frustrated that, you know, she doesn't know really what to do. You know, she was, I think, at the beginning of the movie, she's like staring at the canvas with what am I doing? What am I, you know, where is this going? I mean, she has a block.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly right. So, I mean, that's the whole start and the premise of the film is we find out that she has a opening that's coming up within the next few days, I think 5 days at the start. And she's barely started this painting that she's already been fronted money for. And she has hit, as you said, Kevin, or as you stated, a block. She has a block. So she's hit a point where she lost her creativity to complete this painting. And as a result, she's getting bum rushed by her agent, her gallery, and also her landlord, because all three are expecting something, and she's not delivering. And so that's pretty much where the movie begins, I guess, right? Anyone?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so let's see. What other things we wanted to talk about? Yeah, well, let's talk about, before we get into the spoiler and throw up the flag, spoiler flag and all that, let's talk about the issues you said, Kevin, with the drugs, nudity, and you even said that if your wife walked in, you would be worried that it was X-rated. Obviously, the nudity and drug use, I mean, you can find that stuff in pretty much any cable TV show now. So that isn't necessarily...
Like My Little Pony?
No, you know what I'm talking about. Game of Thrones, obviously, for the nudity. Breaking Bad for the drugs. The violence, you know, you can just go to pretty much any TV show for violence. You don't even have to go to cable. So,
well, I mean, there's the one scene that's pretty explicit.
Yeah, well, you know what? You haven't seen Game of Thrones, so it's really not any more.
I saw the first season, so I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
So which scene is really explicit? In terms of sex?
Yeah,
I think that's what he's referring to.
The threesome.
Okay, I mean, there's one scene where she takes her top off. I mean, I don't.
She's topless a lot in this movie. Yeah. So.
Right.
No, it's not that. It's the threesome.
He's talking about the sex scene.
I know the threesome. Yeah, just didn't. I've seen so much worse in other movies. I found that, and it was so visually weird with all the stuff going on, that I didn't find it the same as I would find it in some other movies. But I understand what you're saying about it.
Yeah, I would agree. I understand what you're saying, Kevin. However, I'm similar to Barrett, and probably you, Mike, too, since you weren't you were still trying to figure out what Kevin was talking about, seeing this type of stuff in pretty much every major TV or film that I oddly watch. So, but again, though, it may be off-putting for some folks for sure. So I could see that, Kevin. What else? Any other things anybody wanted to bring up prior to our spoiler side and actually start talking about scenes and critiquing and all that stuff? Anything? Mike? Anything?
No, nothing I can think of.
Okay. Sounds good. All right. So we'll throw up the spoiler here. We're being as vague as possible because there is a big thing that is revealed almost 70 minutes into the film. So if you want to go into this blind, please do. Otherwise, we are going to talk about everything and anything related to the film as discussed before, critique and review. All right, so the spoiler flag is up. Now, let's start with you, Barrett. Yeah, because you said you liked the boyfriend. I kind of did, too. I mean, when I said there's no likable characters except for a handful, I would say he's one of them that is kind of likable. Okay, sure, he smokes dope, but he's otherwise sober and clean of hard stuff. And
he took advantage of her a little bit, but
he
cared about her.
Yeah. Well, and that type of thing that he took advantage of wasn't like anything malicious. It was more just being typical, give me a ride. I need a ride. Come on.
Yeah, and then being late. Yep.
Yeah, and then also, as you said offline to me, Barrett, he also had a job. Or it was you, Kevin. When someone said that he had a job, he's a bartender, right?
He's a bartender.
Yeah, so he's... he's got the day job, or a quote-unquote day job, because bartenders usually work at night. So he's kind of, he's a working guy that just, is kind of dating this woman, I guess.
Well, you get the sense he's, he's a guy. Yeah, he's a guy, maybe a little bit of a slacker type, but not a loser is staying at home, and living out of his parents' basement with no job either. So, he's an okay guy, just an unremarkable character. Unfortunately, he, I think, could have been a better anchor for the audience.
Because he's
not involved in this, but he really is pushed to the side for a large portion of the film.
True.
Because the film does very much stay on her character, Dez, right? Is her name?
When he shows up, he kind of grounds the film a little bit. So I think you're right. I think it would have been good to have a little more of him.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. Is like when he's working, a lot of times it's at night, right? So when she's out hanging out with whatever she does, it's obviously at night. And so he can't be around anyway. And... then what happens is that she goes out and parties it up pretty hard at these underground rock and goth and whatever type of clubs these are that I never went to. I know that there were some of these in my city, Boston, but I never went to them. I went to the yuppie ones. But and he's kind of clean anyway, right? So like we said, he doesn't do hard drugs or anything like that. And so these type of people that she would associate with during the time she's out alone wouldn't be the ones that he probably would be hanging out with anyway, right? Opinions, anyone?
Well, he knows her friends. I think he knows like that one couple.
Because at one point in the movie, they're together, all four of them, right?
Yeah, and they're all chatting and all that. I mean, I don't think he has a problem with any of them. It's just, like I said, he does have a job, but then also, like, the Dez, I think her name, Courtney looks at him, and she's like, well, why are you still with him? And she's like, I'm with him till something better comes along.
You mean Ronnie Horsecock?
No. Her Dez's boyfriend.
Oh, Dez's boyfriend. All right.
Yeah, Dez's boyfriend. You know, Courtney just says, you know, why are you with him? And Dez replies, ah, I'm with him till something better comes along. And you know, Courtney's like, good for you, or whatever. You know, I mean, you know, it's obvious that there's no real affection there.
Right. I think that's part of the issue is.
Well, I mean, I think there's more affection on his side. He seems to care about her. And I think he doesn't look at her as, well, I'm only with you until something better, someone better comes along. He wants to stay with her more than she wants to stay with him.
Now, Mike, you were going to say something.
Right. I'm saying
that's the problem. Part of the problem here is
if I really want to get, when you have a character centered story like this, that isn't
Henry the Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Right. I think you want to kind of be on the character's side a bit.
Right.
And, you know, I'm finding her boyfriend more empathetic than her. I just didn't find her a very sympathetic character. And given what she's going to end up going through the film, I would have, you know, sort of like, you know, not giving a shit about Rosemary and Rosemary's Baby. You know, you want to, you know, you kind of want to be on her side. And I think it would have been more helpful if they had done more to develop her character in the beginning. To win us over to her side, you know, or like, you know, winning us over, they, you know, do things to make Joaquin Phoenix as a likable character in the Joker before he goes off the rails, you know, to do things to win your empathy and support for him. And I don't think they do that very well here. So
well,
I mean, a woman that isn't particularly likable become something that's also still is not particularly likable.
Let me ask you this, guys. After watching the film twice now, and the way she acts to, say, the fan or to her boyfriend or to pretty much anybody in the film, is she does she have antisocial personality disorder? In other words, is she a narcissist or a sociopath or something like that? Because
I'm not trained in any of that, but one thing I notice is that she says everything is somebody else's fault. She doesn't take the blame for anything. It's somebody else's fault. I mean, there's probably some narcissism in there. But like I said,
I just feel
not,
like she's young.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of when I was young, I was probably not the nicest person all the time either. I know she's like the extreme, but. It's...
Well, it doesn't help that she ends up taking the drugs. What is it called again? The Diablo. Well,
yeah, Diablo.
There was Bliss, Diablo being a particular type of Bliss. It was taken so early in the film, we don't get a good grasp on who she is without the drugs.
Well, she was already on them in the first place. I mean, she goes to them pretty much saying... I'm stuck. What have you got for me?
Well, but she says she's been on. She hasn't been on them for a while.
Right.
She's been clean for some time. Right. So within 15 minutes, she's back on using the drugs. So we really don't, again, get to see what her baseline personality is like.
Right.
And again, giving us a day or two in her shoes, you know, where we could see, you know, that her personality is changing as opposed to, well, this is who her personality is.
Right. Yeah. Because I'm curious. Like, Garrett, you said, you know, when you were young, you know, you could have been rude or more of a stuck up, you know, as young people are. But like when the fan comes up to her and says, oh, I love your work and all this, you know, you would think she would say, oh, thanks a lot. You know, I appreciate
it. Well, she's
it,
an addictive personality, too, though. So that also can tend towards that. And so, you know, it's really hard to tell. What her, like you said, since we don't see much of her before she starts that, it's hard to tell what she's really like. So
she's an asshole.
Yeah.
I mean, that's guaranteed. I think even before she was on the drugs, right? I mean, she seemed kind of like a jerk.
Well, I mean, it's hard because she's, I mean, it starts out with her doing something nice for the boyfriend. Let's begin with that.
That's a fair point.
So that's one thing. She does something nice for the guy. Of course, she also does it bitching and whining the whole time that she's doing it. So, even that is sort of a two-way street.
Right. She's confronted in the hall at the very beginning by the landlord, right?
Right, with the landlord, and blows him off and saying, give me, was it 3 days? Which, of course, starts the clock ticking for the audience. Right, so okay, well, in my mind anyway, right, is that okay? She's got 3 days to finish this painting, and what she needs in order to pay her rent.
Right, but she does blame other people, as Kevin said, right? Because she goes, well, my agent has to collect from my gallery. The gallery hasn't paid me.
She's just bullshitting. She's just she's clearly, this is her, last note. This is the last notice letter or phone call from the credit card company, and she's just kind of spinning it. This is her way of saying checks in the mail. So she's obviously just full of it. She is lying her ass off to try to buy herself just a little more time, in the hopes that she'll get this painting done and get her the rest of her. Because what'd she get, like a $10,000 advance?
Yeah, something like that.
I said, so, which again, and get an advance for an artist of $10,000 for a painting, that's
damn good.
That's pretty, she's doing pretty well for herself. It's also kind of hard, she's being asked to do a painting that she promised, and I don't know, maybe it's part of that, it's just such an overused trope at this point in films, which is, an artist who doesn't know what to write about, or to paint, or song to sing, and gets stuck. And so they write about an artist who gets writer's block, or an artist who gets artist's block, or whatever it's going to be. I mean, there's probably a half dozen movies, Stephen King movies, based on that concept alone, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And so that's, a lot of us have jobs where, we aren't going to go in feeling all that inspired. And you just do something because you're obligated to do it. Some days you feel good about it, and sometimes you just grind it out. And so, again, the idea of finding empathy for the character is like, well, you made a promise.
Right.
Got to kind of grind it out a little bit.
Right.
Got to do something about it. But, hey, that's part of it. That's me and my attitude towards those things.
Right. I agree. I didn't feel any empathy for her really throughout the movie. I mean, she creates all of her own situations.
Right. Well, I've never been a fan of the struggling artist anyway, because I mean, Chrissy, if she was here, co-host Chrissy, she would explain it really well, because she has a day job and she writes all the time, much more than I do, because I have little ones and all that. But she has more time, so she writes a lot. But she's smart enough to keep a day job and pay her obligations and have extra money to take trips to Disney World and all that, and still try to get her art out. And so I, right off the bat, I've all these films that you've mentioned, Mark, whether it's an artist, a musician, or a writer that has these problems, I just roll my eyes saying, they should have the day job. Although when I think I asked you, Kevin, you said, yeah, but what could her day job be? What can she do? Or it could have been you.
You suggested that she, she could be a waitress, server at a restaurant. It's like, yeah, right. That won't last long. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. Could you please take it back? Why? What's wrong with it? What's the matter with you? I could just see her just yelling at a customer, but it doesn't have to be, it could be, stock room or something, just to, just to get money on the table, or just to get money, money in the account, so she can at least pay for her, pay for apartment. And actually, one thing that kind of struck me is that if she's so desperate for money, how is she buying drugs?
Well, that's where
people that are addicts have money for that, but they don't for what they need to have it for. All
right. Well, and Mike, you made a good point here, which is, I mean, she can't be that struggling if she's made a career where she can get $10,000 up front. That means a lot of people trust her and know her and all that. So for her to land up in this situation, And most of it, as we see at the beginning, isn't even the drugs necessarily. It's her, as you said, Kevin, she has a, not writer's block, but artistic block, right? So she just gets stuck and has this deadline, and she already probably blew, yeah, she already blew the $10,000, as we know, because she can't pay the landlord. So as you said, Mike, she put herself in this own situation, right? I mean, that's exactly what you were implying, right?
Well, kind of, and I don't want artists to be telling me, you don't understand how hard it is. It's like, well, if you're going to make a living at it, then you have to recognize sometimes you have to meet a deadline. You know, and there's certainly tons and tons of artists out there who do covers for albums or do movie posters or who do, you know, magazine covers. And I'm sure they're not proud of every single thing that they put out there.
Same with actors.
And same with actors. Someone, you know, and they said, yeah, like, you know, Michael Caine, you know, they asked, how could you make Jaws 4? It's like, because they paid me to do it.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
You know, that's a job. That's my job. His job is not to pick and choose only the very finest. You know, very few artists are in that position where they can do that.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, you're now in the position where you're not kind of taking. It's why I always use the example of the Broadway musical Rent that yep. like immediately alienated me when you know, it starts out with, you know, here are these people who are these artists living a bohemian lifestyle in Manhattan, who were, I think it was Manhattan, who are shocked and horrified that they may actually have to get a job to pay rent as opposed to just right. continuing to make whatever their artistic pursuits are.
Yeah. Well, in other words, be responsible like everybody else in the world.
Right. At a time that I was personally having, you know, trouble of my own making ends meet or having just come out of that situation. So yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, right. Anyhow, yeah, it just like I said, it's back to the but then again, that's a small part of the story, but it is a part of the story, right? You know, it's
right.
Like you mentioned, Devil's Candy. You know, it's a similar thing, except of course, I don't think the guy was was the father or the mother who was the artist?
The father.
Okay, but I don't think that was a case of like, you know, they're going to lose the house if he doesn't finish his painting.
Correct.
She seemed to have the whole I'm too good to do stuff, so there's no way she would have ever gotten a day job because she didn't even like doing, you know, album covers and things like that. She was just trying to get herself to be willing to do that.
Right. Well, yeah, she definitely had that artistic thing, and again, no disrespect for artists, but sometimes, you know, if you're doing paying gigs, because eventually even though you're doing it for the art, a lot of times you're getting paid for it. And so when she said she did a couple of covers that had a male nudity and female nudity, and they were rejected, and then they were covered up with plastic wrapped around it to cover up the nudity, and you know, she's complaining and all this and whatever, and it's just like, well, she must know the market, right? So obviously if she does something with all this nudity in it and then it's covered by a plastic wrap or brown paper, or it's rejected flat out because it's not what they want, you know, that's just how it is, right? I mean, you figure artists, I mean, you're not going to see Robert De Niro, you know, want to be, I mean, now, well, at this point in his career, he probably would, but back when he was popular, he was just doing dramas and things like that, you know, and it's only as he began to get older that he started doing comedies and whatever. So, you know, it's just, you're not going to see Robert De Niro do a Jim Carrey film. And if she's going to draw something that is for the wrong audience, you know, it's not going to sell. It's not going to work. And I don't know which one of you said it, but the point is being is she's blaming other people rather than taking responsibility.
I mean, comments? some of her complaints. I mean, yeah, I get it. I think if her personality was just a little bit more sympathetic, you would act. I mean, when the man. her agent says, okay, you know, I'm sorry, I'm gonna have to cut you loose. You know, I mean, if she was a little bit more sympathetic, you would feel bad for her. You know, but when, and at first, actually, when I saw the movie, when I saw he was cutting her loose, I thought, I actually started feeling sympathy for her. And then she opened up her mouth. You know, and then she started going to the party and all that sort of thing. And it's just, it's like, all right, you know what, this person, you know, I mean, I don't know. It's just, it's one thing when he says, you know, you're not making me any money, you know, because I mean, it's obvious she's struggling a little bit, but it's kind of funny because woman, he says, you know, you're not making me any money, but she's supposed to be this great, but she's like, hey, you know, I'm a great, you know, artist. What are you doing to me? You know, so I don't know. I was feeling a little sympathetic for her until she went and got drugs. Because and then right. after that, that's when she started shooting her mouth off and blaming everybody else for, you know, for her problems. When obviously some of it was her own, a lot of it was her own fault.
Right. Well, and I can't blame the agent, because the agent has a job, and
oh, yeah.
if she embarrasses him, then they won't use him anymore. And so rather than drag her on, he just fires her. You know, I can't be agent anymore. Because I mean, obviously if she took $10,000 and she won't let anybody see her progress, cause that's all he wants to do is see her progress. You know, just show me your progress and, you know, and we're dope, but she won't. And so his first impression is, oh, if she's not showing me progress, she already took 10 grand and it's due in 3 days. She probably hasn't done squat. So I got to fire her. And then, of course, she flips out and blames him. And it's like, I don't know. It just makes sense to me.
Oh, yeah.
Did.
Well, I mean, if you're in business to make money and something's not making you money, you stop doing it.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, yep. I mean, businesses is not a charity. It's a business. That's the idea. You do this to make money. You know, and sometimes you eat the profits at the first, you know, maybe first couple things, but you know that, you know, let's just say she had potential and all that, and then, you know, everything was going well, but then all of a sudden, hey, you're not making me money anymore, you know, for a while now. Not just, oh, you had a bad piece that wasn't very well received, that's fine. You know, the next one will be better probably, you know, but it's kind of, you know, but then, you know, but she's not making a money. It sounds like she's had a few flops and she was just kind of going downhill, and, you know, she was starting to yell at everybody. And yeah, even the fan, you know, the guy who actually liked her art, she, you know, she told him off.
Right. Now, Mike, you're the one that always says that, or at least have said it a few times in the past, art is still something that, you know, money. It's still something that is a business. I mean, Kevin kind of summed it up, but you've always said that, right? That, you know, you don't just make the film and then hope it isn't just seen, but you're hoping to get your money back on it and all this other stuff, right?
Well, most people, I mean... I know enough independent filmmakers at this point, you know, or people who have day jobs who bust their ass trying to make, you know, the one film they can afford to make. I know Steven Rudzinski, this guy who did Everyone Must Die, and I reviewed that for the podcast years ago, like in our first year, made, you know, a bunch of films and he would lose money on it. The one he got the best reviews was a film a couple of years ago called Carousel, and it cost him a couple thousand dollars to make, you know, but he still ended up losing. He got a lot of, sold a lot of discs and stuff, but he still ended up losing money on it. And then he did, as a lark, he did A Very Meowy Christmas, which was just a talking cat Christmas movie for $500, and he hasn't made a fortune off of it. But now he's making his third meowy holiday film, and he said the people ask why. It's because I've made money off of it, because the financial incentives aren't there. Like I said, people want to see Carousel 2. He lost money on the first one. He he'd love to. He can't do it. He doesn't have the money to do it. But he's made a ton of money on Amazon off of, not a ton, but made a profit off of a $500 talking cat film twice, and now he's doing it a third time because that's, he said, this is who I am now because that's how I'm making money.
Right.
And God bless him for that, because a lot of these indie filmmakers don't make money, which is why you shouldn't pirate indie films. I usually shouldn't pirate at all, but Disney can live without your money.
Right. No, and that's a fair point. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, not everybody is M. Night Shyamalan, who has a father that's a doctor and has a hell of a lot of money, you know? So a lot of these people are similar to this artist in this film, you know, living from paycheck to paycheck. And they don't have the fallback of calling daddy or mommy and saying, hey, could I have a couple extra grand to, you know, pay some bills. All right. So let's start talking about, I guess we have to talk about the drug stuff and how that affects her. And then eventually to the big twist. But Kevin and Mike, you guys mentioned Courtney and Ronnie already. Clive, I think, is another one. There's a handful of people that are part of this scene. There's the dealer himself, and as you said, Barrett, he seems actually like a pretty nice guy, except that he sells illegal drugs. And then there's these people at night, and they reminded me of the movie The Doors by Oliver Stone, where Ray Manzarek's character says, dude, let's get out of this party. These people are vampires. And Jim Morrison stays behind while the other three members leave the party because it's not their scene. And she lives in this scene. So let's talk about some of that. Farrah, you brought up the drug dealer originally. So let's talk about all that stuff. Go ahead.
All right. Well, she goes to get drugs because I think she feels like that's going to help her get back her mojo for her artistry. So she goes to this guy that she knows obviously pretty well, and he's obviously a big drug dealer because he's got bales of stuff in the room he takes her to, and he says he's got some new stuff and asks her if she wants to try it. And so she does, and he tells her to be kind of careful because it can really make you go bonkers. And she does a bit of it, and she does go bonkers. When she kind of finally wakes up from doing it, she comes out into the party and does a lot more partying. And that's where Courtney and is it Donnie come in?
Ronnie.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, she's out for what seems like hours.
Yeah, like, I mean,
she's
half
just
a day.
Laying there on the floor, and a guy steps in thinking it's the bathroom. He's like, oh, it's not the bathroom, and you're passed out. Okay, sorry, didn't mean to disturb you. And then, I mean, all of the drinking and the drugs that she does, I'm thinking to myself, how does she live? I mean, how do you do all that and not need to go to the hospital? No, I mean, granted, I've never been into any of that, so I don't know. I honestly don't know how much the human body can take. But obviously hers can take a whole lot because she, I mean, with all, like I said, you can just see her. This party seemed to have lasted, I don't know, about 15, 20 minutes. And all it was her, well, I'm probably exaggerating a bit, but I mean, all she see her doing is snorting something, drinking, snorting something, drinking, snorting something, drinking, you know, and while she's complaining to everybody about how hard life she has. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, if I did even a quarter of that, I'd be in the hospital, you know, they'd be pumping my stomach and my wife would be looking for my will. I mean,
I agree with you there, though. I mean, you know, we've seen enough of these rock and roll documentaries and sports figures documentaries and whatever, where the party life is what it is. And these clubs do exist in pretty much every city, from St. Louis to Richmond to Boston to New York. And people live this way, and they are among us, you know. I mean, it's kind of weird, but they are among us. Some of them have major problems, and are substance abuse to the point where they need help. But oddly, a lot of them are functioning in everyday life, which is interesting. And I'm right there with you, Kevin. It's just strange, you know. I mean,
well, I'm just surprised at how much your body could take. That's
yeah.
I've seen this type of scene before and been not really, I don't know, kind of on the outside inside it. And yes, people can definitely go that hard.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't surprise me. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I've haven't seen it to that point, but I mean, I've seen it in film and stuff. And so, and those, you know, listening to famous rockers and rappers talk about it. And so it didn't surprise me as much, I guess, as it would for you. I would agree with you, though, Kevin. If I did it, I would be gone, meaning I'd be, like, sick and I don't know. I don't think I could do it, but a lot of people can do it.
Well, chances are she probably built up, some sort of resistance to it.
Yeah,
right, which is usually what happens.
And in your 20s, you can take a lot more than you can take in your later years, too. So
yeah,
that's part of it as well.
Yeah, right, that's a fair point. Yeah. So that's what she does. I mean, this movie only takes place in, 3 or 4 days. So I think it starts, it's literally 3 or 4 days. So it could be near the weekend, and this is just maybe the weekend way she does things, like a lot of people do, and then on Monday she's fine again. I don't know. But we're only watching 2 to 3 days, or 2 to 3 nights, I guess. And in those 2 to 3 nights, she's a heavy partier, that's for sure.
Yes, very heavy.
Let's now talk about Courtney and Ronnie, since these are the, I guess, not only the bad influences similar to the drug dealer, but unlike the drug dealer, who's innocuous otherwise, these people are the true, into the scene, I guess. This weird club scene.
Yeah, so they get her more drunk and drugged and then get her into the bedroom with them.
Right. So they do a threesome.
Yep.
Now, let's talk about that. This is where me and Garrett were talking offline earlier today through a text. When did she become when did she pass the no return point? Was it with the threesome, or was it a drug that was given to her by Courtney and Ronnie?
Or something that was given to her, yeah, by those two.
Yeah, I don't know.
Go ahead.
When she's past what point in terms of?
When the big twist happens, when she was already on the way to that big twist at the end.
That's on the first night, right, is where she has the three-way.
But was it the three-way, or was it?
I think it's because of the three-way and not the drugs.
Yeah.
That's my feeling from what Courtney tells her later.
What do you think, Mike? Was it sexually transmitted, or was it drugs that did it? Or was it a combination?
I don't think they clarified it well enough, to be honest with you.
I would agree. Yeah.
And part of the problem of putting the audience in the perspective of where the character is, we're no more aware of what happened to the character than the character is. Right. So she doesn't remember what happened. She doesn't remember how she ended up in this particular place. And so we don't really know where it is. Like, where did she end up getting exposed to the thing that she gets exposed to?
Well,
at the end.
I mean, from what I've seen is that, she took the drugs, but the drugs didn't, I don't think the drugs did it, because, Courtney was if you call her a vampire, she was a vampire, and you know, it didn't seem like any of that was really going on for Dez until after her experience with Courtney.
Either the three-way
or there was that one scene in the bathroom.
Yeah, but yeah. She'd already thrown up, though.
Yeah, she was throwing up blood. That she was throwing up blood, and so that's when Courtney, and this was the thing that was really interesting. Courtney takes her glasses off when she leads in, but you don't see her face. It's all dark. You know, it's like the darkness is talking to her, you know, and pretty much saying, you know, you're different now. And then Courtney turns around and this other woman comes into the bathroom and Courtney kills her and, you know, drinks her blood and then gives it to Dez. And then Dez drinks her blood and says, oh, I feel much better. So, yeah.
That happens the next night, right? And before that, she's already having dreams of, like, blood coming from her throat.
Right.
And she's seeing that in the mirror and things like that. So I feel like it was definitely that first night and when she's in the threesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, so, I mean, I know in, like, you know, some vampire, you know, stories, legends or whatever, it's, you know, vampires are created when one bites one or when one gives her, you know, like when the vampire gives his victim his blood. You know, and so, I mean, you don't know what happened during this threesome because, I mean, it looked pretty rough.
Well, you got to remember, though, that this isn't a true vampire film through and through because, again, she sees her reflection in her mirror still because she smashes the mirror later in the film and all this other stuff. So,
well, yeah,
it's vampiric for sure, but...
Well, it's another take on vampire and a vampire movie.
Right, so she could have, you know, this could even be an allegory for hepatitis or AIDS or something like that as well, because, you know, she had the sex. We don't know if it's unprotected. If it was
probably was,
it probably was, and if it was a lesbian as well, obviously that could possibly. I don't know if there's true protection with that anyway. So. Who knows? Yeah, it could have been unprotected. So whether it was she got bit or if it was just the sex, I'm assuming it's just the sex. The transfer of bodily fluids was probably what did it. But again, as you said, Mike, it's never really known, right? We're clueless, like she's clueless, right?
Yeah. Something happens in that we know something happens to her in that first night. And, you know, we know that the next morning she wakes up, talks about she's covered in blood. She's or there's blood on the floor. Right. Was that the issue?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
And she's made progress on her painting.
Without
remembering it, and so she's changed in some way, and she writes and says she feels different. She wants to know what she took, you know, because something has changed.
Right. Let me ask you guys this, because until the big twist at the end, I was thinking a lot of this was an unreliable narrator where she was just going insane.
Yeah, I was feeling a little bit of that too for a while.
Because I was like, did people really get killed, or is this just her thinking it because she's all drugged out and mentally, you know, having mental breakdown? I just wasn't quite sure. What did you guys? I mean, you kind of agreed too, but what about you, Mike and you, Kevin? Mike, what about you? What did you think first? Did you think it was an unreliable narrator? And all of this was in her head until the twist, or were you on board thinking
it all of it? I mean, again, she's definitely an unreliable narrator because she's on drugs and we don't know what drugs necessarily she's taking and how they're altering her perception because she doesn't know everything that happened. I mean, I think, you know, when she wakes up the next day, you know, and there's some of her paintings completed, that I think is real. Stuff that happens that other characters comment on, like her boyfriend commenting on the painting. Sure, I buy that. But like when she sees the guy killed in the bathroom, that I had no idea if that was real or not, and had no real reason to believe that it was real.
Right. What about you, Kevin?
Well, there is part of me wondering if it was an unreliable narrator as well. I don't know, cause especially at the end where, I was kind of wondering, but then I thought, you know, I couldn't tell you. I think it happened the way it was. I don't, for example, at one point I thought, you know, we're on spoilers, right? When she put the gun to her head and shot, and then all of a sudden she wakes up again. You know, I was wondering, was that, you know, just all in her head? But then, at the end of the movie, she kind of blows up and there's blood all over the floor, you know, so is that, but, and then her painting's done. So I don't know.
The only part I thought by the end was in her head was when all the people were coming towards her.
Well, there was one part where that, for example, like with George Went and the rest of them were coming at her, but I think with the drug dealer and, because that's when, Courtney comes in, you know, and gets him in the back. But then when everybody else is like crawling towards her and she pretty much says, you know, go away. And all of a sudden they all disappear. You know, that's all in her head.
Yeah. But I think the gun, I think she actually shoots it and she just heals.
Yeah, she does.
Right.
Right. And we see that. And again, that's sort of, you know, do we believe what it is that we're seeing?
Yeah.
Right. Right. All right. So let's talk a little bit about Courtney, more than I guess Ronnie, because Courtney is really the catalyst. Obviously she's an unlikable character. And not necessarily, and I'm not talking about for what she does and all that stuff, but just, her lifestyle obviously is alternative because, you know, she's into drugs and partying and nightlife and all this other stuff that is different than anything I would see generally. But until is she a bad person, or do we think she's a bad person before the bathroom killing?
Courtney?
Yeah.
I think she's a bad influence.
I think she's a bad influence. She's pretty full of herself.
The bathroom catalyzes that she's a bad person too.
Oh, absolutely. But we're talking like before the bathroom scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, before exactly. The bathroom scene, she just seems to be a bad influence at best.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Because I know you've heard these stories, whether it's baseball, and I've heard in NFL too, where when they enter the league, they have to go through this thing where they say, make sure you're smart with the people who you hang out with, because a lot of people will be hanging out with you because they're users or they're bad influences or whatever. But I read one time, I forget what sports writer wrote, something where what happens if the athlete is the bad influence and he was just taken out of anonymous and he just had a talent. And the question that Kevin just brought up was that Courtney is obviously a bad influence for Desi, but is Desi the bad influence herself? And we're just blaming Courtney for that lifestyle prior to the murders and the vampirism, because Desi is part of that lifestyle too.
Yeah, it's there's always the thing. Look, she's clearly the if the boyfriend is the good influence, for lack of a better term, then Courtney's the bad influence. She's the friend from that life, you know, and they often talk about how, you know, we tend to behave with our friends the way we did when we were friends with them, you know, so you get, You're more likely to act childish and mature when you hang around your college friends, because that's when you last hung around with them. You know, you tend to fall into old habits. So she's choosing to hang out with someone that, from what I gather, she hasn't seen in a while because she hasn't been living that particular lifestyle for a while. So is she a bad influence? Sure. Why is she a bad influence? Well, because she kind of ran into her arms. Right. She put herself in that circle. You know, I don't think she has any delusion as to who it is that she's hanging out with.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that makes me curious about her. Obviously, you're right. Since she hadn't seen her for a while, she's obviously staying away from it, that lifestyle. Maybe it was because she was really working hard to get the paintings. Maybe she was now traveling in different circles. And also, Courtney, we must have to say, even though she's a bad influence, it's not like Courtney is pursuing her. It's the other way around. Desi is pursuing Courtney. In other words, when she comes to the point where I need to get on drugs because I think maybe that will make me more artistic again, she jumps full in, which is including her friends, to go back to the friends that she hadn't seen for a while. So it's kind of interesting what you said earlier, Kevin, which is she's her worst enemy because she's the one that's making all the decisions, not Courtney or anyone else. It's her, right?
I mean,
obviously, she got bad luck. I mean, anytime you go out and you do hang out with the quote-unquote wrong crowd, you come home and you can be fine, but there's always a chance you can go out and you know, you were in a car accident with a
drunk. I don't think somebody mentioned her, you know, you mentioned earlier, she ran into Courtney's arms. It's like, no, I mean, they just happened to see each other at a party. They were hanging out, you know, they were drinking and doing drugs together, you know, and, you know, it was kind of a one thing led to another, but I mean, Courtney was definitely, I mean,
well, the I mean, next
wasn't
night,
there, wasn't
though,
there
right?
a point? I mean, wasn't there a point? Now, help me with this one because you know you saw at least twice. Was she even said, "Hey, you know, I think I should go," and Courtney's like, "No, stay, have a few more drinks."
Yeah, there's that definitely happens.
Yeah. Okay. So I mean, you can to still say. I mean, now granted, you know, Des could just said, "Hey, no, sorry, I really got to go. I got to work. I got this painting to do, you know, if I don't, I'm out, you know, I'm kicked out of my apartment, you know, all that, you know," but she says, "Yeah, okay, sure, I'll stay." So, I mean, you know, Courtney is a bad influence, but, you know, Des, you know, if you can definitely still say that Des can make her own decisions.
Well, yeah, because she calls Courtney and says, "I'm mad at you for doing this to me." And then later on, she calls her and says, "I really need this stuff again because I need to be able to create art." So,
right.
I'm paraphrasing, of course, but.
Well, I think right. she was upset at Courtney for the whole, you know, you made me a vampire, essentially. But then she's like, "Hey, I'm getting sick," you know, and then she also needed the drugs to make her. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, she's kind of on a, she's definitely on a bad relationship
I
with Courtney.
I find it very interesting that it's obvious Courtney knows what has happened to her.
Yes.
Because she makes it fully known that she knows about it throughout. But she does nothing to help her. And then seems to get mad at her at the end when she just goes kind of crazy with it. I just find that very interesting.
At one point, Courtney, I mean, when she stakes the drug dealer, now a vampire, I don't know if he's a vampire now because she bit him, but I mean, she's like, you know, there are rules, you know. So, I mean, I think that there's a, you know, Des is still trying to get a handle on what's going on, but then she also sees that, hey, you know, doing the drugs and drinking blood is giving me a good, you know, giving me a good product here. So I need to keep, she's seeing this as, I got to keep doing this so I can finish this project.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. That's an interesting point, because obviously, you know, this movie could be an allegory for a lot of things. It could be an allegory for drug use. It could be an allegory for a bunch of things, like I said, AIDS or hepatitis or something. But what about the fact that it is it's a drug, because now she needs blood, and she the blood is the new drug, even more powerful than Diablo slash Bliss. But a lot of the reason she wants the drug isn't necessarily to feel better or get high. It's to be able to do her painting, meaning she's willing to do anything, no matter what the results, to get the ability to draw the painting. So what does that mean symbolically, or what is the screenwriter, which is also the director, trying to say? Is he trying to say that blood is now the new drug and she's a hapless victim of addiction? Or is it more than that, because the point of getting the blood isn't even now to just feel good, but it's also to be able to do the painting? Anyone have thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I just said that, you know, she needs both the drugs and the blood to continue on with the painting. I mean, that's...
No, but what's the director saying? We know that's why she's doing it, but what's the director trying to say about the painting then? What's the painting? Obviously, it's important because it will get her $10,000 in fame and a fortune, all that. Is this really more a symbolism of that, meaning getting fame, fortune, and all that, more so than an allegory for drug use?
Well, I mean, you've often, and there's something else I tend to find bullshit too, have a lot of artists talking about how their drugs are their inspiration. I tend to find that, at least when listening to musicians, you can tell when they hit their intense drug use period, because that's when their music starts really sucking. Yeah, but that's often when they've gone kind of over the edge. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I don't know if he's trying to say that, which just starts getting into when you have artists making movies about artists, you always have this issue of a little bit of pretentiousness, of a sense of self-importance and sacrifice for your art and how much we struggle and suffer for it. And maybe saying that, he may just be trying to tell an interesting story, which I think he had. I just wish he had fleshed it out more. But I don't know that I got really a message in the film.
I like your point there, though, Mike, which is maybe that is the case, where the point was is that artists self-destroy themselves to make great art or something. And that is that kind of makes sense, even if it is, like you said, self-importance.
Well, some artists do, and some artists just make art and live a happy life. You know, they make a living doing it. And they aren't miserable bastards, you know, at the end of it, or suicidal, or there's certainly a cliche to it. You know, there's obviously, we all know the story of the drunken writer or what have you. And there's obviously some truth to that. But again, some of that is just feeding into your own narrative.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Now, the painting, what was that all about? What do you guys think that supposed to be? Because that's like the last shot of the film, basically. It's actually kind of pretty cool painting, actually. But
it's a cool painting, but it's nothing I couldn't have seen on a cover of Heavy Metal magazine.
Yeah,
you know, it's I'm guessing herself or a woman, on a pile of
tortured souls.
Yeah.
Right. She has demon eyes, but she has a halo.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting.
It is what it is.
Right. All right. So let's see what other things that we want to bring up that we haven't really gone in depth to. What about the drug dealer and the poker players? Obviously, that was kind of the poker players were kind of comic relief, I guess. And that's where we see George went for fans of Cheers. But was there anything?
Sure, I would call that, you know, comic relief. But okay.
I mean, you got these guys arguing.
The guy pulls out a gun on another. I mean, this is even. I'm talking about
the first time we meet them, not when they all get killed.
There's just guys that just hanging around. I mean, they were just kind of there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, what did you think, Barrett? What did your opinion of that whole scene? Because they didn't seem like they were druggies. They were just hanging out playing poker.
They seemed like friends of the drug dealer, so they probably had some iffy backgrounds. You know, who knows what they did. They seemed like a reason to have more corpses. So there were some good kills in this movie. You know, there's some that I liked the way they did them visually.
Yeah. Sure. Corpses waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. I mean, the whole poker group were, that was probably the most intense, scene of the whole film when she goes nuts on all those people, and it goes on for probably the longest until obviously the ending. What about the orgy of blood that she does when she near the end, where she's like naked and covered with blood and like in an orgiastic like facial expression as she's painting? Does that have something to do with what you were talking about, Mike? The tortured artist, and she's like reveling in her art or what? I mean, it's just a cool scene, obviously. I mean, I'm trying to look at it more symbolically, but again, you know, you can just watch this film as a grindhouse film.
I'm not sure that there's symbolism of her killing for her art. And I guess dying for her art, but she also murders everybody for her art. So I really don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to be taking out of the film. I really don't. I don't know what he's trying to say with the film. I think, again, it's a neat idea. The revelation at the end that she's a vampire is a neat idea. I just think it needed more. So, I don't really have a great handle on it.
Sure. No, that's fair. I mean, you know, we can watch other films like Haunt. That me and Barrett and you Mike talked about last week, and you know there's, you can argue that there's no symbolism in it at all, and it's just a fun film, even though there was, you know, some stuff with the background of the girl and the abuse and all that. And this film here obviously seems more in depth with that stuff, but it also could be just pretentious douchebaggery too.
I kind of like that she gets all into this art and she finally finishes it and she's all orgasmic about it, and then the sun comes up.
Right.
And yeah, she gets awesome. Her just desserts.
Yeah, that confused my wife for a minute, which I don't know why, but she just blows up? I was like, it's, you know, she opened the window. It's sunlight.
She's like, he's a vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's kind of clueless. I mean, she knows she's a person of the night now, in a sense. But she's more knows that she's into blood and all this and murder and all this other stuff. But I don't know if she's that smart to know that I'm a vampire now, because it's never said once.
Yeah, because she's forgetting hours and hours of what happens, whereas. And that might be because of the drugs, whereas the Courtney woman, she seems to know what's going on, you know? So
it's Courtney who comes in, who, you know, I mean, I think she even has like a wooden stake, and she, you know, gets the drug dealer from behind through the heart. And it's what
was
she
that
says.
The drug dealer, or was that the boyfriend?
I thought it was the boyfriend.
No, yeah, it was the drug dealer. Because the boyfriend didn't have it. Well, had his head mostly severed from his body, and the drug dealer only had like a big gash in his neck. And so, because I mean, the boyfriend comes in later with his head just kind of hanging by a shred of skin, you know. But the thing is this. But it was the drug dealer that Courtney stabbed in the back, and he blew up, or no, he melted, or something like that. And that's when she, you know, that's when she says to her, you know, there are rules, you know, and she's trying to explain it to her, and then Dez ends up killing Courtney, and then Courtney starts melting.
Right. But the main point, besides trying to determine if it was the boyfriend or the drug dealer, I don't think she knew she was a vampire. Obviously, Courtney did. She's been a vampire probably for a longer time, obviously, and knew the rules. You know, this isn't a feeding ground. You have to be careful. You can't just kill everybody discriminately and all that. And also, if you follow the quote-unquote vampirism, you may not think you're a vampire even after all this, because like I said, she sees herself, you know, these people can see reflections of themselves and things of that nature. So some of the tropes that we've seen in other films and books about vampires, they're not in this as well. So,
well, one nice thing I would say about where we are in popular entertainment is that everybody knows, we don't, if you watch old movies, they used to have to take that scene where they explain to the audience what a vampire is, what its weaknesses are, you know, just on the off chance somebody has no clue what a vampire is. Now we all know, right? I mean, we all go in, and you can do something like this and not have to pause the film, not explain anywhere in there that vampires are killed by sunlight, for example. So this is, I guess, an advantage of when, you know, the whole culture is more or less up on the mythology. Same thing like with zombie movies. Nobody has to explain that you have to shoot the zombies in the head anymore, right?
Right.
Or
if you get bit by one that you're going to turn.
Or if you get bit by one that you're going to become a zombie, or, you know, same
shoot
thing.
Shoot them in the head.
Right. Exactly. Right. Unless you're actually making changes to the mythology, you don't have to explain it to anybody. We all right. can figure it out. So we kind of all figure this out, I'm guessing, around the same time. You know, I'm guessing about 3/4 of the way through the film.
Yeah. I was a little late because, again, I thought it was all in our head. I didn't believe it until Courtney shows up at the end.
I was a little early on it. I kind of saw it when she was in the bathroom and the.
Yeah, I kind of figured it out in the bathroom too, where she, you know, she's throwing up blood, but then after she drinks blood, she feels better.
Yeah.
But continue, Mike. Sorry about that.
No, that was it. Well, I wasn't sure what when she was throwing up blood. Was she actually throwing up blood? Was it what she was seeing?
Right, because she's, you know, she's taking some hard drugs. So is she just thinking she's throwing up blood?
Maybe, or was she taking something like I was, you know, was it, you know, was there something medically wrong with her? I certainly wasn't thinking vampire. Were the drugs
well,
that
no,
she was
the
taking killing?
It wasn't the, I mean, for me, it wasn't the fact that she was throwing up blood at first made me thought, oh, she's a vampire. It's after she drank the blood and she said, and pretty much you can tell she's like, oh, she feels better, you know, she feels better. And right. then even she is like, you know, trying to get a hold of Courtney saying, what did you do to me, you know, because she realizes that the only way she could really function now is blood, you know. So Dez is starting to think, okay, what's going on, even though she's starting to see Courtney, you know, with women that, you know, like anybody that passes by, she thinks, oh, that's Courtney. Oh, wait, no, that's not Courtney. It's somebody else. But, you know, so she's starting to see things, but, you know, she's realizing that, you know, blood is the only thing that's, she realizes she's craving it, because that's why she started attacking everybody in the drug house, because a guy cut himself or got, you know,
his nose got broken.
Yeah, that was it. He got his,
yeah, that was the drug dealer. That was the drug dealer.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the drug dealer, you know, and then all of a sudden she attacks him. Was, I think she bites, she takes the flesh off of his finger, so all that you see left is his the bone, right?
Right.
You know, and then she attacks the other guys, you know, and just completely rips them to shreds and drinks their blood. So, I mean, I think she, you know, she's got to figure out, all right, well, I'm drinking blood. I have a craving for blood. I must be a vampire. I don't know. I don't see how you cannot see that if you were in that situation.
Right, right, right. Unless it was all in her head, right? And I that's why I was still confused, because, like, are these people really dead? Because the next moment she's in the shower or she's on the floor in her apartment. And I'm like, did all that actually happen or is she just dreaming it? But based off of what we find out, you guys were all on board and were right. Well, I was wrong. I thought it was going to be one of those all-in-her-head type of films.
I guess I'm not used to the all-in-her-head types of films because I'm not used to the unreliable narrator type films. So I just kind of took it at face value.
Sure, sure. Yeah, they were real popular. There was 1 year, Mike, when we did reviewed a bunch of films. It seemed like every third film was the unreliable narrators all in their head. But that's kind of fallen out of favor, and you don't see it as often because I think it was way overdone. For some reason, I thought that's what it was. I have the film on in the background now, and what happened, Kevin, it was the boyfriend that was killed by Courtney. Basically what it was is she kills, meaning Desi kills her boyfriend, drinks his blood, you know, like you said, rips his head almost off. But it's what happens is he comes back to life as a vampire, and then Courtney kills him.
Right. Because they're going to be together forever, and she doesn't want that.
Right, because she's a narcissist, and she never liked
him. She doesn't really want to be with him. He was there. He was comfort food, and she doesn't want to be with comfort food.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, it was her companion and lay person, and a concubine, basically, and that's pretty much it. You're right. Well, like you said, Kevin, he was more into her than she was into him.
Right.
Yeah.
See, I didn't think it was the boyfriend because his head was still on his shoulders.
Yeah, well, what happens is
it showed the tear in his throat, though.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
It was like he was healing from it, I think.
See, yeah, similar to the gunshot.
Okay, because I kind of thought it was the drug dealer because he also had a tear in his throat.
Right. Yeah. But, no,
you know,
yeah,
I mean, if you're watching it now and it's the boyfriend, then that, okay, no problem. That's fine. I just.
Sure, sure.
They do look a little too similar. That's the problem. They're kind of interchangeable, too.
Yeah, yeah, they both have the grizzly beard and same complexion and hairstyle and all that.
And almost same attitude.
Yeah, same attitude. Yeah, yeah, jolly guys. Yeah, exactly. What about the gunshot? That was pretty cool. When she shoots herself, I actually thought that's how the film was going to end for a second.
Yeah, that was definitely a nice effect.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, it was pretty solid.
Well, and she shoots the boyfriend, too, right? At some point, he's on the ground, crawling.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. She thought she takes him out with, like, three or four shots or something. But it doesn't do anything because he's already infected or turning into a vampire himself, I think. And then, eventually, Courtney comes to kill him. Let's see. Anything else? Any other scenes anybody wanted to bring up that we missed or want to talk about? Anything?
There's one thing that I we talked about this earlier is that when she was at the goth club, it just one thing that kind of stood out. You have this gothic industrial type band playing music. You know, it's like, okay, this is fine. And she, you know, she goes in, she sees this guy who, you know, wants to have her be an artist for, you know, some of his albums, but then she runs out again. And you see this woman kind of in the back of the crowd, like you see everybody kind of like this dark and black clothing and all that. And you see this woman, she looks like she's in her, older, and she's got this white shirt on with what look like roses. And I'm trying to figure out, well, that kind of stands out. I just didn't know what the reason was for that, for that whole bit to be there.
Right. Yeah, I'm trying to actually find that scene now, Kevin, because like I said, I have it in the background. I actually have the Blu-ray, and it actually has a commentary on it. I haven't listened to it yet. Yeah, you mentioned that to me earlier today. I think it was early today, offline. And I didn't notice it at all. I mean, what about you, Barrett? Did you notice this?
I did not notice it. Yeah, I did not notice it.
All right. What about you, Mike? Did you notice that?
Say that again?
Yeah, explain it again.
Okay,
Kevin.
There's the part where Dez goes in with Courtney into the Gothic Industrial Bar because there's a band there that she either likes or that she knows about, and so they're listening to it. They said, "Oh yeah, you know, there's this producer or what have you that, you know, likes your work, and they want you to be on, you know, some art, you know, wants your art to be on some of his albums, or, you know, on his album covers or whatever, magazine covers." And that's when she starts getting sick, or something goes on with her. She's running out, and as she's running out, I think it was a scene where you had this woman just kind of sitting there back there enjoying the music, and she had what looked like a white kind of blouse type shirt with flowers on it, and I just thought, well, that stands out, because I mean, I've been to goth clubs in the past, and trust me, I've never seen anything like that. So,
yeah. So you're saying she was dressed out of place?
Yeah.
At the club. Yeah. Okay. I'm looking at it now. I see her now. Oh my God! Look at this. She looks like a soccer mom.
Yeah.
Short hair, glasses. Oh, and she's with a boyfriend too, with that has flannel. I'm, you know what? I'm thinking, I bet you it was just probably people in that are related to the director or someone, friends, and says, "Hey, you want to be in the film?" And, you know, throw you in the background. But
yeah,
it's,
I don't know. It just stood out to me, and I didn't know if there was a reason behind it, or because, I mean, I've been to concerts. Like, I remember when I was in high school, you know, we saw Metallica. And there is this one woman who was obviously a mother of one of the kids, you know, at the concert. And she was off by herself, you know, holding her coat and just watching this whole thing kind of with a shocked look on her face. And I'm thinking, yeah, you probably are feeling a little out of place there. But this woman in this movie she looks out of place, but she's kind of going along with the music. And I'm thinking, that just doesn't, you know, what's wrong with this picture type of thing?
Right, because they have Courtney and Desi, you know, dancing like crazily. And this woman with her glasses and she basically looks like Phyllis from The Office with short hair. And she's just smiling and watching the band.
Right.
And not like dancing or anything. It's just weird. Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Who knows? Maybe that's her son on stage. I mean, you really don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. That is kind of funny.
Okay, good. I'm glad somebody else sees it. You know, it's not
just me. Yeah. I'm going to try to take a picture of it and text it over to everybody. But yeah. And then there's a guy that's with her that kind of looks similar. It's kind of funny. Who knows what that is? It could have been just an extra that they asked to get into the film, or it could have actually been someone else. Who knows? It's kind of funny, but I don't know. Anything else, guys? Anybody want to talk about? Right. I guess that's pretty much it. It's a pretty straightforward film. Basically, like we said, an artist that has artist block gets back into drugs to quote unquote be creative again, and then gets into the wrong crowd and basically becomes vampirized. So we'll talk about our final thoughts after we do some house cleaning and such. Mike, let's talk to you first. I know you've been pounding through films recently. Anything you want to let folks know about that would listen to this podcast and whatnot?
Well, probably a couple that are going to end up on the top of my list, but one I would definitely recommend is an Indian film that was released in 2018, I guess overseas, but is now available here. You can watch it on Amazon Prime for free if you're a Prime subscriber, and that's Tumbad.
Yeah, we almost that was one of the films we were looking at to possibly do tonight. We had a list of nine, and that was one of the nine, and it was recommended by Jason Lloyd as well. But continue, Mike.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, so that is definitely one I would recommend people check out, especially, it's a take on a Indian folktale, I guess. It's a kind of a fairy tale, a caution against greed, or the dangers of greed. But I just thought it was really effectively creepy. It's another good example of how I think we do really, really well when we get outside our own cultural norms. You're talking about vampires. It's hard to do much new and original with vampires. You know, this is doing something I haven't really seen before, and the fact that we're in a different culture helps quite a bit.
Okay. Yep. And how do you spell that? It's
T-U-M-B. Like tomb, except with a U instead of an O. T-U-M-B, bad, B-A-D.
Gotcha. Yep.
Now, is it an English film or is it a subtitled? Or
it's subtitled. So you gotta make it through subtitles.
I don't mind subtitles. I just need to know so I'm, because sometimes I'll be doing other things while I watch a movie. But for that, right, I need to pay attention.
Well, and right, and Indian films, you never know, because they have 16 official languages, and English is one of them, so you never know what language it's going to be. So if it's not English, it's one of the other 15. Yeah. Okay, anything else, Mike?
That's the main one I recommend. I also really liked Eli off of Netflix, and that's one where it's got an ending I didn't see coming, and credit to them for that.
I was going to ask if you've seen that other one that Jason Lloyd recommended that we had on our nine films that we almost did for this episode. The one about Daniel Wasn't Here or something like that?
No, I've not watched that yet.
Okay, gotcha. So Eli has a ending you didn't see coming either.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend that.
Both. Is that an English language one?
Yes.
Okay. Continue, Mike.
That's about it. The rest, we'll talk about when we get to our year-end episode, I'm sure.
Okay. Yep. All right. So at least two, Tumbad and Eli, were good enough that you wanted to mention them now. All right. That's good. Anything else that you wanted to bring up, Mike? Whether it's video games, TV shows that you've been watching that are genre-related, conventions, anything like that? Anything?
Most of the stuff for Scares the Care weekend is taken care of. That's the first weekend in August, which actually straddles, I think, July 31st. Also, they have, I think, three guest spots still open for that. So they started announcing guests, not long after
Thanksgiving, right?
Even before that, I think they were announcing some guests back in September or October. Right. Now, some are obvious people who come back every year.
Yeah, sure.
So anyway.
Yeah, that sucks because it's the same weekend that Taylor Swift's going to be playing Foxborough Stadium or Gillette Stadium, and I won't be able to do both. So it kind of sucks for me, for folks who care. let's see. All right, very good. What about you? Oh, any news, Mike, that you wanted to bring up?
Trailers
or anything like that?
Nothing that sticks out in my head right now.
Gotcha. All right, very well. What about you, Barrett? Anything that you've seen I know you've pounded through some films recently too, or TV shows that are genre related, that video games or any of that stuff.
Well, I think the big thing I'm going to be doing in a few weeks is going to a kind of smaller convention called MarsCon that happens in Williamsburg. Same hotel you go to for Scares That Care down here. And they're going to have David Weber as their special guest of honor for writers, I think.
Yeah, he's big.
Yeah, so it's smaller than most cons, but it's a lot of fun. They have writing workshops, they have games, you know, going on all over the place, and it's
science fiction type stuff, right?
Science fiction, fantasy, yeah, just about everything. And they have a little dealer room where you can go buy stuff, you know, games, books, things like that. So that's the next big thing on my radar right now.
Right, right. Now, anything else that you want to bring up?
Nope.
All right. Mike, I forgot to ask you. You saw Star Wars. What did you think of that one?
I saw it. It was okay. Not fantastic. You know, I thought it was my least favorite of the three films in the new trilogy. But if you didn't like the last two films, this is not going to win you over.
Yeah. All right. I would concur with everything you just said. Yeah. I have nothing more to add except what you said. You basically quoted what I would have said. All right. Very well. What about you, Kevin? Any TV shows that are genre related or books or anything, movies that you've seen that people would be interested in that you would want them to know about?
I watched in the last, like Monday through yesterday, I watched 6 movies out in the theater. Closest thing to genre related is Knives Out, but it's more of a whodunit, not really comedy, but it's a good movie. It's fun. So, that one I would definitely recommend seeing. I did see Star Wars, and my impression was that at least the first half hour was pretty choppy, and then it kind of smoothed out by the end. It was okay, you know. It was good. I mean, I'm not running out and buying it, but you know, I'm glad I saw it. And then I saw Jumanji. And that was a lot of fun. That was very good. That was probably one of that and Knives Out were my two favorites for the week.
How does it compare to the first one with The Rock and?
Oh, it's the same. I mean, it's the same. They added a couple cast members. It's kind of interesting that I think this one was, I found myself enjoying it more than the first one, and that's saying something because I really, really liked the first one. Okay, I mean the first one was really, well, technically it's the second one, but the last one with The Rock was really, really good, and I mean the whole cast together just did a fantastic job. But then what they did in this one is that they added more characters. And it's not much of a spoiler, but The Rock was doing different personalities. Like they were all the four main characters were doing different personalities. Like, I mean, you see it in the Cummings that, The Rock, at first is Danny DeVito. Like Danny DeVito becomes The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
So you have The Rock going around talking like Danny DeVito. And right. He did, I mean, The Rock did a fantastic job. He really did. And, yeah, all except one of the characters gets mixed up. And trust me, see it, you'll enjoy it.
Yeah, I actually saw it too. I actually like the first one better, but this one is really good as well. So I'll agree with Kevin on that. It's a recommend. If you like the first one, definitely see this one as well.
Oh, absolutely. No, they're both fantastic. They're both absolutely fantastic. I just think that the most recent Jumanji I liked better, but like I said, it doesn't mean that the previous Jumanji was bad. Far from it. They're both extremely good movies. Both
right,
really
right.
fun. Both
yeah,
really
I
fun
actually
to watch.
I brought my kids to the second one, this new one. Yeah, and they liked it as well. It's good family fun, even though they said, "Oh my God, they said ass in the film. They said ass." Yeah, that's one of the words they aren't supposed to say.
Well, they said more than that in the movie, but yeah.
Have you seen it, Mike? Jumanji?
Not yet.
No, okay. Just checking.
I figure I'm trying to catch things. Like Ford versus Ferrari has been out since November, so I'm trying to get the things that I haven't been able to grab yet.
It's been out since November 20th, I think. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, that's why, Kevin, I recommend that you go see Richard Jewell before it leaves the theaters, because that's one that'll be gone soon, too. It's still in the top 10 the past 3 weeks, but...
Barely.
Barely, yeah, exactly.
My local theater only has one showing a day, and it's late, but... Right.
Yeah, so if you want to see... certain films, yeah, I can see why you went to see the Ford versus Ferrari first, Mike, because it's an older film. What about TV shows? Anybody watch *With the Witcher* or any of the new shows? *You* is another one that people are talking about. Anyone?
No, I got a bunch to watch. I finished watching the new *The Watchmen*. If you like that, is really an excellent follow up to the books.
Agreed.
And I'm kind of surprised to say that. And I would certainly recommend giving a shot to His Dark Materials, also on HBO, and The Mandalorian. Of course, everyone's talking about that from Disney Plus.
That was good.
And that had a couple of clunky episodes in the middle, but it definitely, I think, really ended on a very high note with its last three.
Well, even the clunky ones weren't bad.
No, they weren't bad. They were just, a little clunky.
They were. They were in the middle of the season, but I mean, the whole season. I mean, I don't know. I liked it all.
No, and that's fair. But I think Mike's being fair too. He's just, if he has to.
Well, it's eight episodes. Eight episodes. I think there were two that were kind of meh for me, and it was episodes 4 and 5. So I'll take 6 out of 8. Any day of the week.
So I watched the first 3 episodes of The Witcher so far, I can see why it's getting only 60% good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. So it's actually gaining support since its original ratings when it first came out. But it's very slow and clunky at points. So it's not as exciting or enjoyable as I was hoping, though. There are moments in all 3 episodes that are really, really good. So I'm going to stick with it and really hang in there. Because, again, this is an introductory season, I guess. And they're going by the book that is the short story book. So it feels disjointed, and the 3 stories that aren't connected are going, in each episode. And so it's kind of tough, but by the last episode, the main characters are all together, and if assuming they have a season 2, which it's already been announced there will be, the next season will be book 1 of the real series of the novels. So I'm going to stick it out, because once that happens, and I heard that some of the later episodes are good, so just a warning, don't expect Game of Thrones, because it's more high fantasy than that, but also it's not as good, at least right now, but it's still good, it's just not as good. I mean, it didn't capture me like Game of Thrones kind of did, so I'll keep on chugging through, and hopefully it turns out to be pretty good. And if everything's right, season 2 will be really good. And that's pretty much there. So, all right. So I guess that's pretty much it for that. So I guess we can get into our final thoughts on Bliss. So let's start with you, Mike.
Yeah, I made it very clear, I'm not a huge fan of the film. It's again, if you like stuff where you spend most of it with a lot of loud heavy metal music and people running around, a lead character running around in a drug-induced alcohol-fueled binge haze, then you might like it. And, yeah, for a very long portion of the film. That really just does not work for me, period. And it never really does work for me. And it's, you know, so I can only say that it doesn't work for me. I'm not going to say that it's bad. It just does a thing I don't like. You know, so
the launch, and
relies on it very, very heavily. So, and I've said that all along. Every now and then it works for me. And that's, I usually also note that too, and note that that's a weird exception. But, you know, whatever. I don't really have anything more to say about that. I liked his first film much better. I'll still be looking to see what his next thing is after this.
All right, very good. Kevin?
I wasn't, not a fan. I think the drug scenes and the party scenes were too long. I don't know. None of the characters were particularly sympathetic. Didn't like any of them except for the gallery owner, where she was just there. In other words, she's the one that I didn't dislike. Other than that, none of the characters I really had any sympathy for, and I don't plan on seeing this again.
All right. Very well. For me, I liked the film a lot, especially the second viewing. I could see why Mike, especially more so than Kevin, may have not liked it because of the type of film it is, drug induced and all that. So it's kind of trippy and trying to get into the head of our main character and whatnot, to the point of like jarring music and things of that nature. But it's a pretty solid horror film. It's got everything that most horror fans would like, specifically as at least me and Barrett would agree, the grindhouse horror fan. So blood, violence, nudity and whatnot. So over the top scenes and really cool kills. But I also think it has a pretty cool idea of a character study, even if the character is someone that is kind of not that likable. So I would give it a thumbs up and definitely check it out. I now hear that it's on Shudder for free. It came on Shudder, I think, January 1st for free now. So prior to that, it was VOD or disc only. So folks who have Shudder can see it. But if you don't, you can actually rent it or buy it, I think, $5.99 and rent it for like $4.99. And then the disc is like $14 or $15. And I bought that, and it has extras, including commentaries and all that good stuff. So I would give it a high recommend. Big thumbs up. Barrett?
Yeah, I would give it a thumbs up. I actually like the trippy aspect of it and the kind of mind-bending feeling of the movie. There's definitely a lot of blood and gore and nudity, so there's pretty much something for everybody in the horror genre in there. The characters definitely are not very likable, but I'm not sure that that's what it's supposed to be about. I think it doesn't want us to sympathize with the character, main character. It's an opinion whether or not that's a good idea or not. But I really enjoyed it. I think it's worth checking out if you like horror. You might not like it. You might like it. It's about 50-50 here, so give it a chance.
And I think we pretty much laid out, you know, the type of film it is. And
yeah,
you get a sense one way or another.
Right, right. And I out of all the things that I've said, I still think Art House meets Grindhouse kind of fits. So it has the Art House feel that some people like, but it has the grindhouse feel, as Barrett mentioned. But as a result, you know, as Mike said, some grindhouse people may not like the film because it's kind of too artsy. So it's an interesting film. So it could be an acquired taste because of that.
And again, I still argue that it's grindhouse, that calling it grindhouse is not necessarily a great descriptor for it as to who it's going to appeal to.
Well, right. And that's the reason why I think the art house part of it.
Art house meets grindhouse is a better description.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that could turn off some people. So it depends. If you are into grindhouse and you watch this, you may be kind of confused or wondering what the hell's going on because of the art house feel to it. But art house people may be confused because it's over the top grindhouse aspects. So it's a weird film. It's definitely interesting film, and I can see why, Mike, you said that it could fall into those Mandy type films or Braid and whatnot. And as a result, like I like Braid, but I hated Mandy, and I know you dislike both of those films. So it really is an interesting aspect. The violence and the blood kind of reminded me of that movie Revenge. You remember that film, Mike?
Yeah, but I didn't care for that one either. But that was but that wasn't even nearly the. You're talking about the Shudder exclusive that came out last year that everyone's saying was reinvented the rape revenge genre when it just pretty much told the rape revenge story. Yeah, no, it's which was a perfectly adequate rape revenge film, but it was stylistically, I don't think it was anything like this because it was coherent.
Yeah, that's true. Even though it had some unreal moments too, but yeah, exactly. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So yeah, it's hard to explain the film. But either way, for folks who are curious, 89% reviews on Rotten Tomato by critics, 73% by audience scores. I usually don't trust audience scores anyway, but because a lot of them were I think a fake for the new Star Wars film. So I just always stick with the Rotten Tomatoes actual critic scores, and it does have 89%, which is pretty good for about 30 reviews. So this is Joe Bagus' third film out of Rhode Island. As Mike said, Almost Human was a pretty solid horror film that made a lot of lists back in 2013. I've already recommended, especially to you, Barrett, to check it out if you can. So where people can find it, Shudder right now, free, otherwise VOD everywhere. And if you want extras, the disc does have extras, including director commentary. So with all that stated, Mike, why don't you lead us out?
Well, thank you once again for listening to the Dark Discussions podcast and for our discussion of the 2019 film Bliss. Please tune in next week where we're hopefully going to be doing our annual tradition of the bucket list films, where each host has chooses a film off their bucket list, a movie that we haven't watched before, and we're finally going to cross it off our list, and that'll be hopefully five different films to discuss in brief.